Good morning. All right, we're equalizing on the fly this morning. This is a brand new microphone that we tested to make sure it worked the other day, but haven't had a chance to get into all the dials and all that stuff. So Mike is working on that while I talk, so hopefully it'll get better as we go. A couple things this morning. One, it's not only CJ and Amanda's last day with us, it's also their anniversary. So be sure to say happy anniversary and farewell and all those things. We're going to miss you guys, but excited that you get to be closer to home. Also, if you are visiting with us this morning, I will not make you stand up because I have read everywhere that people don't like to be embarrassed. And I know I hate being embarrassed, so I'm not going to make you do that. But what I will tell you is I have goodies today, and I'm not responsible for any of this, but I will show it to you. If you're visiting for the first time, there is going to be a bag in the back after services, and I hope you will grab one of those. It is full of gifts for you, fairly full of gifts for you. There's stuff in here. There's a bookmark and a little booklet, and I think there's some bread and all kinds of stuff, a bulletin for today. But there will be someone back there to hand you one of these. And then also, we have these, which are little folders that tell you all about the church. And there's something in here about our Bible classes and who we are at the Eugene Church and also what the Church of Christ is all about. There's a visitor card in there that if you would fill it out, we would love to send you a letter next week and tell you we appreciate you being here. And also, there's a prayer card in there. And whether you will ever see us again or not, if you have something we can pray about in your life, fill one of those out and leave it with us, and we would be happy to pray for whatever situation you'd like us to, whether it's health or things you're dealing with in life or spiritual issues or whatever it might be. We'd love to pray about that for you. Last but not least as we start, good to have so many of you back. We've had a lot of folks traveling over the last few weeks. And it's great to see some of these sections filling back in as we are nearing the end of the summer or partway through. I mentioned to one of my kids this morning that it's the last Sunday in July, and he had a look of horror on his face and said, "That means August is coming," which means school is coming shortly after, and yes, it is. So for kids, sorry, for parents, I know you're counting the days. So you can have your days back and life back to normal. But we're excited to have people coming back and everybody back with us. This morning, if you'd like to turn in your Bibles, I'll give you options. The story we're going to look at is in Matthew, Mark, and John. I'm going to have John up on the screen here. It's in John 12, but we're also going to be referring to Matthew 26 along the way. So if you'd like to open to Matthew 26 so you can see that and see John 12 up here, however you would like to do it, that will be great. And we will start this morning with disagreement, because it's church. Why not? Let's do that. There is disagreement about this story when it comes to scholars out there. I've noticed in my Bible that there is one point of view. And some of you in your Bibles, you'll have cross-references. You might have the heading here that Jesus is anointed at Bethany in verse 6 of Matthew 26. And then under that, you'll have it point you to different places in the Gospels where this same story is told. And in mine, it points me to Luke 7 as one of the options. Now, all the commentaries that I have read lately tell me that that story in Luke 7 is a different story, and they'll give you any number of reasons about it, but mainly because it's at a different point in the sequence of the text. When you look in Matthew and in Mark and in John, you will find this happening right before the triumphal entry into Jerusalem. When you look into Luke, it's way, way earlier in the story. And so most folks think that that means we're looking at two different stories here. So we'll treat it that way. But we'll look in Matthew and in John, especially this morning. In John chapter 12, beginning in verse 1, it says, 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, where Lazarus lived. Sorry, I just went blank for a second there. Whom Jesus had raised from the dead. Here a dinner was given in Jesus' honor. Martha served while Lazarus was among those reclining at the table with him. Now this is who John gives us. John gives us Mary and Lazarus, or Martha and Lazarus. What we see here in Matthew is that this is at the home of Simon the leper. And we start to realize something very quickly here, which is he is surrounded at this dinner by evidence of his power. John points out Lazarus, and we have Martha serving, and we don't want to get too caught up on that because I would imagine we have all been to something at someone's home where there are other people serving that are not the residents of the home that are helping out. Shortly after we got here, we went to something at the foreman's house, and several people who were there as a part of it were helping out and putting food out and all that kind of stuff. And I think you would find Martha, consistent with her character and what she is interested in and what she does, she is going to be a server, regardless of where she goes. And if we had a potluck here, she would be one of those folks serving in the kitchen and making sure everything was kept up. And here at this home of Simon the leper, she is also serving. Martha is the sister of Lazarus, who we looked at a few weeks ago, who was raised from the dead. And in the book of John, John says a lot of things in this story are done so that we can believe. And he comes back to a lot of core miracles that he talks about throughout his book. And the biggest one up to this point in John is Lazarus being raised from the dead. So John is going to center in on the fact that it is Lazarus who is there. Matthew, on the other hand, looks at Simon the leper and at being at the home of Simon the leper. Now, what we see in both of these folks is, to the Jewish custom, they are unclean. Because Lazarus was dead, and dead is about as unclean as it gets to the Jewish culture. The lepers are not terribly far behind. And lepers would live off on their own, and as they walked into a town, they would have to announce ahead of themselves, unclean! Unclean! So you would know to spread the way. To not be touched, to not have to come into contact, and not make yourself unclean either. Now, the fact that they are all at this home tells us a couple things. One, either everyone there is willing to risk the being unclean, or two, and much, much more likely, Simon has been healed of his leprosy. The fact that he has a home here within this town and folks are there means he has been healed. Now, there are a few options for how that might have happened. Medically is incredibly unlikely in this point in time. And anything other than the fact that the man who is the guest of honor at this dinner did it doesn't make a whole lot of sense. So it is very, very likely that you are now at a dinner with Lazarus, who has been raised from the dead, and Simon, who has been healed of his leprosy, both most likely by Jesus. And so as you sit here, and I wonder, we've all heard that question asked a lot of times, if you could have dinner with anyone throughout the course of history, who might it be? And you'll hear Lincoln and Washington and Napoleon and people on down the road, and a lot of religious folks will usually get back to Jesus or someone within the Bible story. This would be a pretty interesting dinner to be at, because not only do you have Jesus, the Son of God, there, but you have two people whose lives were forever changed in really unexplainable ways. And as you sit there in their midst, you could not help but deny the power of God at work there. Our family yesterday drove on a gravel road for about 8 or 10 miles through the redwoods in Northern California. And I was in awe of the redwoods. I've seen pictures, and if you've ever been there, you understand that you can't capture that in a picture unless you're in a satellite somewhere, because they're too big. And as I drove amongst them, I found myself trying to concentrate on the road and at the same time kind of looking out my window a little bit and up and just being amazed. And I told my wife at one point, I feel like I'm driving through a fairy tale. I feel like this is a place that shouldn't be real. And then we pulled over at one point and got out and hiked a trail that went around through the redwoods. And I said to my family somewhere through that, how can people see this and think it just happened? It was just unbelievable to think of these trees 300 feet tall and bigger around than our car that was parked near them. And how could people just think this just happened? And I find myself walking through that forest being amazed by the power of God. These folks, as they are sitting here at this dinner, have to be amazed at what they see around them as this witness of the power of Jesus. Then Mary took about a pint of pure nard, an expensive perfume. She poured it on Jesus' feet and wiped his feet with her hair, and the house was filled with the fragrance of the perfume. I want you to think about that fragrance for a moment. I decided not to do it in case we have people with allergies or asthma or something here this morning, but I have a preacher friend that preached about this, and he set up a fan on the stage and opened up a container of nard, which is not something you just go buy at the store nowadays, but maybe easier to find in Eugene than some places. He opened up this container of nard, and he turned the fan on, and when he was explaining it to us, he opened the little container up and had us smell it, and it's a fragrance that just began to fill the room. And he said you could see people's faces as they begin to smell it have this extra sense that was coming into the story. I drove a church bus around the country a lot as a youth minister, and the last church bus that we had, the windows would not open, which was a bad, bad design idea. But periodically, I would have some seventh grade girl, no offense to seventh grade girls, some seventh grade girls would pop open something of lotion and decide this is the perfect time to soften her hands and exfoliate and all those things. And I would get this overwhelming seventh grade girl lotion smell up at the front of the bus, and it would not go away. And as this home begins to fill with this smell, you can't help but ignore what's going on. And so not only are you amazed as you look at Jesus and think of what he's done, but now the smell of what's going on begins to overtake you a little bit. And one of his disciples, Judas Iscariot, who was later to betray him, objected. Why wasn't this perfume sold and the money given to the poor? It was worth a year's wages. Is this waste that we see going on? Now, this is a Eugene sermon right here. Are we wasting? We at our apartment complex, we have the recycle bin and we have the regular bin, and we try very hard to put the right things in the right places because we don't want to be wasteful. I find myself being the man in the house, and I think my wife probably does some too because she's an accountant, occasionally looking at things that we buy or spend money on and think, are we wasting here? We would analyze things along our trip and say, is this the worth of the money that's going to be put into it? And when we get into church mode, it takes on a whole other level, doesn't it? That's God's money. Something magically happened as you pulled your wallet out this morning and pulled some bills or a check out of your checkbook and put it into that tray, and suddenly there was a kind of moment, and it's now God's money. It was God's money before it left your wallet, by the way. Judas, who is the money keeper, and very dishonest, because we have this this moment here where he is described as the betrayer. He brings in, but this is kind of wasteful, isn't it? Because the way this would be described in the other Gospels is, this is a year's salary worth of pure nard. And if we're going to have a practical discussion about spending, this is a bad idea. But this is not a moment for a practical discussion about spending. And you don't see Jesus do this a lot, because usually Jesus is the one who can be kind of practical about something like this. Usually Jesus is the one that is the first to help and to heal. But as he sits here between someone that he has likely healed of leprosy and someone that he has definitely healed of death, and he hears the one who is going to betray him with a criticism, that's not what he has in mind for this meal. And so he says, before we get to that, Judas didn't say this because he cared about the poor, because he was a thief. As a keeper of the money bag, he used to help himself to what was put into it. This is not about waste in Judas's mind. This is about greed. And as good as we can be about controlling that, sometimes it rears its ugly head, doesn't it? Something I want instead of giving. There's somewhere I'd rather spend this instead of putting it in that tray. We get caught up in our money, and Judas did the same. And so Judas brings this up because in this setting, it seems reasonable. Everyone understands that this is worth a lot of money and there are a lot of people that need help out there. But Jesus instead says, leave her alone. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. How discouraging can it be when you're trying to do something great for God and there's immediately someone there to throw a wet blanket on it? Think of how this woman was overcoming embarrassment to do this in front of this crowd. Think of how this woman had spent the money to get this perfume in the first place, planning for something like this, and how this incredible act of love for her God sitting there in front of her, she wanted to do something special. And immediately somebody has the, well, we should have done this. We could have done it that way. Aren't we quick to do that with each other sometimes? A great idea for a way to serve, for a way to grow the kingdom, and somebody quickly comes in and tells us everything that's wrong with that idea, And Jesus pops in and says, leave her alone. I think we need a few more leave her alones in our world. We need a few more people to be willing to stand up when someone is being rained upon and let them know it's okay. Let them know that their gesture of love is appreciated. Leave her alone, Jesus replied. It was intended that she should save this perfume for the day of my burial. You will always have the poor among you, but you will not always have me. And for Jesus, as he is so near to the moment that he's going to go into Jerusalem, this bigger picture is out in front of him all the time. And what we are struck with here is what we do not know. Because a lot of those times when we find ourselves sitting in those meetings and in those situations where somebody has an idea and we immediately find a problem with it and we begin to rain on it, we don't always know the bigger picture. We don't always know where this extravagant gift came from, what's important about it. If you walk into, there's a Church of Christ down in Southern Alabama, and if you walk into this building, it's a nice building, but nothing incredibly special. And you would walk in and think, oh, this is kind of nice, and it looks like it was probably decorated maybe 15 or 20 years ago. They kept it up pretty well. And then you walk in and you find, an auditorium like you'd find anywhere else, and molding on the wall, making patterns, and lots of whites and greens. And then you would notice, hanging from the ceiling, right in the center of the auditorium, is the biggest chandelier you have ever seen. It is the redwood of chandeliers. It's this big, giant, would cover the distance between the hanging lights that we have, brass with more lights than you could count if you got bored with the sermon, sticking up all around the chandelier. I always felt sorry for the light bulb changer in that church. Huge, probably 15, 20 foot in diameter chandelier hanging from the ceiling. And I remember the first time I walked in that church thinking, wow, that's quite a chandelier. And I remember hearing people in town talk about that new church with their big chandelier. Who do they think they are with that big chandelier? It's crazy. Why would anybody waste that kind of money on a chandelier? And what no one knew, unless you got to know the people at that church, was that there was a man who was an elder at that church whose wife was incredibly sick for a long time and then passed away. And when they built that church, there was no one that donated a tenth of the money that this man donated to build that church. His money went into good things. He donated to the Christian school, he donated to that church, he was always helping people, doing good things. And when his wife died, he wanted to do one thing in her honor, and he bought a way, way overpriced chandelier. I have no idea what he thinks about that today. I wonder if he ever looks at it and thinks, maybe a little overboard, one size down, probably been okay. We could have funded the Ashcrafts for another year in Africa instead of having quite that big a chandelier. But that was his memorial to his wife. And if you took the time to get to know people at that church, everybody knew it, and not one of them questioned it. Because they knew. They knew the love he had for his wife, but more than that, they understood the love he had for that church and for God because of everything else that he did. This was the moment he wanted to do something over the top. And so he did. And I will guarantee you, there are people that come to visit that church and they get whatever their equivalent of the bag is that day, and they leave and they think to themselves, it's a huge chandelier. What's that all about? And they never hear the story. For this woman, this is her chandelier kind of moment with Jesus there right in front of her. And she wants to give honor. And for once, Jesus is going to receive honor. Because when you look at what's coming up, there's not a whole lot of honor going on. But in this moment, Jesus receives the honor that he is due. And so we don't know all the time the full story. We don't completely understand what it's like. How small a price would a year's wages seem if your brother who had died is now alive sitting at supper with you? Year's wages would be pretty worthwhile, wouldn't it? And so in this moment, she is going to give honor. Meanwhile, in verse 9, a large crowd of Jews found out that Jesus was there and came, not only because of him, but also to see Lazarus, whom he had raised from the dead. So the chief priests, I have a little box right over my verse right now. Hang on a second. I'll go here. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well, For on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing in him. Man healed of leprosy, man raised from the dead, most amazing thing any of us have ever seen, and our response to it is, we've got to get rid of these people because too many people are believing because of it. That's what the chief priests thought. And instead, you have all these people who came to see. They want to know what's going on here. They want to see more. This is the most amazing thing that many of them have ever seen and ever will see. And the religious leaders of the time just don't get it. So the chief priests made plans to kill Lazarus as well. For on account of him, many of the Jews were going over to Jesus and believing in him. And what we see unfolding here in all of the people and in the religious leaders is the same thing we saw with Judas moments ago. Which is Judas is thinking little picture, and he's thinking greed. And the chief priests and the religious leaders are thinking little picture, and they're thinking greed. If you're in the adult class, we saw the same kind of story happen this morning in Acts, where people's power and money are threatened, and they try desperately to latch on. And the religious leaders of this time were no different. They were threatened by all this, and they want to get rid of the threat rather than see the incredible thing in front of them and believe as a result. Now, Matthew ends the story this way. Truly, I tell you, wherever this gospel is preached throughout the world, what she has done will also be told in memory of her. And as Matthew and John tell the story a little ways down the road after it happens, they're already doing this. They're already relaying the story of what she did and how amazing it was. And for us, we are doing the same thing. There is a memory of what has happened here that must be shared. And so this woman, who seems small in the grand scheme of things, who has taken a year's worth of salary to honor Jesus, does something that we still talk about 2,000 years later. That's why Matthew would say that what she did was a beautiful thing. And I think what we lack sometimes in our world is not enough beautiful things. There are not enough occasions that we can point to where Jesus' glory has been shown in our lives. There are not enough occasions that we can point to and explain the power of God to people, because we get caught up sometimes in that smaller story. We get caught up in the greed. We get caught up in the lack of self-control. We get caught up in the need for power. And instead, we miss what so many people miss with Jesus, which is the most amazing thing this world has ever seen. And this morning, it's that same message to us. Where do we see a Jesus at work in our lives? Or are we too busy thinking about the logistics? Are we too busy seeing the smaller story? Are we too busy caught up in other things to notice that he is there and he is doing something amazing? Are we too busy in important and wealthy places to see the lesser places that he would go to? How many of us would think of going to the home of a leper, or whatever our cultural equivalent of that is, and sharing a meal and seeing Jesus at work there? Not many. We get caught up in a much cleaner, more predictable kind of world. And Jesus would say to us, that's not always where I like to work. Sometimes I like to work in the place that's not clean or predictable or what you would expect, but instead someplace where my power can be seen. If his power is not seen in your life this morning, I think we got to open our eyes. He is at work all around us. You don't have to go to the redwoods to see the glory of God, although it helps sometimes. You don't have to go to the coast and see those waves crashing in to see his majesty. We can see it in each other. We can see it in the people we interact with. We can see it every day at work around us. And we can make a decision at that point. Are we going to be amazed by him? Or are we going to be the Judas who questions what's going on? This morning, if he is far from you, then this is a time to get closer. Whether it's through baptism and taking him on for the first time, or whether you need to get things back in order and get closer to him again. If there's something we can do to serve you, whether it's to study with you or to pray for you, or if there's something you would like to share with the church family here, whatever we can do for you this morning, please come while we stand and sing.